All right. Hey, everybody, and thanks for joining us for a post-status live interview. Very fortunate to have excellent guests today. We have six WordPress core contributors, people that were pivotal to the release of WordPress 3.9, which came out yesterday. Of course, you can download that off WordPress.org and read about it on WordPress.org or on PostStatus. We did a wrap-up yesterday. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Looks like we got around 50 people in the chat. Feel free to ask questions. And we are going to just talk to these people that are here with me, who are about to introduce themselves, about what they did on WordPress 3.9. We're going to dig into some of the features, and we'll answer viewer questions. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. So why don't we start on my left with Andrew Nason, and we'll move right along the bar.
Cool. How's it going, everyone? Andrew Nason, lead developer for WordPress. Led the 3.9 release with Mike and a lot of other people that you see here. 267 contributors to this release. So the six people you're seeing here is a very, very small percentage, which is actually really cool. It's pretty amazing. We closed 648 tickets with 267 different people, which kind of scary and pretty incredible. So I, for the most part, worked across the board on, pretty much any of it. There were some areas that I was able to avoid because the people who were working on it just were really rocking it, and you'll hear from some of them later. But no, it was a lot of fun, and I was really happy to package it all up and kick it out the door yesterday.
And feel free to say what you do for a living as well.
Oh, well, I work on the WordPress project full time.
All right.
All right.
Gregory?
Hi, everyone. My name's Gregory, obviously. and I work at Automattic. For this 3.9 cycle, I had the pleasure of doing a .org rotation. So what that means is I took a break from my normal team and joined the team that focuses on the open source project and worked on the release. And the main areas that I was focused on was the media workflows, so the media modal that you see when clicking Add Media in the post editor, and also creating live previews of the gallery and, inside of TinyMC through this bit of a TinyMC plugin called WP Views. So that's most of what I worked on.
Awesome. Helen?
Oh, weird. I don't know what order this appears in for you. I'm Helen. I'm the director of platform experience at TenUp, another agency, and I'm a core committer to WordPress. I get paid by TenUp to work on WordPress the vast majority of the time. I also work on some internal initiatives at TenUp, and I continue to do some client work just to kind of bring those perspectives back to core. This release, I worked a lot on some things that maybe aren't super visible, but I did some merging and then splitting of our giant WP admin CSS, and it a big part of it culminated in this 216,000 line commit that took down track, I think, for a few minutes when people tried to load it. And
Nice.
besides that, I've been working on a lot of just things around core for the release, and I even made an animated GIF, whatever, for the about page.
I vote GIF. I know the guy that made it said GIF, but I think he's wrong.
Yeah.
All right. Mike? You're muted.
I can't hear
I'm
you,
Mike
dude.
Schroeder. A bunch of you guys probably know me as Shredder, and I work at Dreamhost, but during this cycle had the great pleasure to be able to help out leading the release. So I touched a lot of different, I guess, parts of the release, but a lot of management. I'm sure you noticed the This Week in Core post, which we'll see if we can help those continue as we go down the road. And, well, just super excited to have it out the door and going, and looks to be going pretty well.
And Mike, what do you do for your day job? We missed you there at the beginning when you were muted.
Yeah, so I work at Dreamhost on sort of various WordPressy things. So I worked on the DreamPress project, which is our managed WordPress hosting. and also spend a certain percentage of my time working on core regularly as well.
Awesome. Mr. Taylor?
Hey, what's up? I work at the New York Times on the blogs team, and I spend 3-9 working on media mainly. And this kind of all the stuff G-Corn, Greg Cornelius, spent his time building, I built on top of and mimicked his greatness, and really kind of try to evolve how audio and video exist in Core. And I think we did most of the things you can do with them in this release, so it was good to like iterate on that and improve that experience. So going to move on to other things in later releases probably.
Awesome. And Weston?
Yeah, hi, I'm Weston Ruder, not Rudder. And I work with X Team. I lead up the WordPress team in the company. And for this release, I headed up development of the live widget previews, which is adding widget management to the customizer, which means that you finally don't have to edit your widgets blind, and you can actually see what you're doing, what everybody's going to see before you hit that publish button.
Awesome. So, as Andrew said before, we're lucky enough to have six of you guys here, but there are 267 people that were part of the release, so we're very thankful for everybody. So, round of applause for everybody that contributed to WordPress 3.9. And just as another side note, there's a lot of things that people can do to contribute that are not strictly code-related. So before we hop into some of the features of 3.9, would anybody like to offer up some of those ways that people can get involved, maybe from a non-code standpoint, or maybe if they want to do code but they don't really know where to start? Y'all want to give some advice, or maybe tell your story of how you got started?
Documentation and support are two of probably the most visible ways of getting involved. It's been really great because over the last week, you know, talking with the support and documentation teams, I was like, so, what are we going to do? And they said, don't worry, we have it covered. I was like, no, but really, things are going to break, what's going to happen? And they're like, no, we got this, we're good. Everything was all set. And then if you do like code too, I mean, we just finished a massive 8.5-month-long effort on documenting every hook in WordPress, which was pretty awesome. Drew James and Kim Parcell worked on that, and that was really great. I mean, that was it's a few hundred commits, 186 files, a few thousand hooks. So those are just two ways of getting involved, and obviously there's a lot of other areas as well, whether it's accessibility or mobile development or obviously design and user interface and things like that.
So I have a question for the people that have a full-time job that's not working strictly on WordPress.org. So Weston, Scott, Helen, when you guys have been in the past or now, when you're balancing working on WordPress core with your full-time job, how do you do that?
I mean, it's really kind of, you know, a hobby, I guess. I mean, it's what I spend a lot of my leisure hours doing, I guess you'd say. I don't know. I mean, a lot of it, I do spend some time during my day working on it, as my time here allows. We work on sprints, so, you know, every 2 weeks we work on a certain amount of work, and as long as you're focused on that work enough of the time, you know, you can make time to work on the core stuff. I just make time in my day to work on it every day, and then when I get home, usually a couple hours a night at least, I just want to work on it, so I usually just spend some time working on it. I guess that's how.
Helen, how's that worked for you in the past? You're full-time on .org now, though, right? Mostly.
Yeah, I am now. Previously, it was a lot of, you know, understanding spouse and doing work during the off hours, just trying to figure that out. I don't know. It's the same as it is for anybody else, I guess. You have to make time to make it happen. or else it, you know, it's really easy to let it not happen.
I think it becomes an addiction, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
No, it does. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna say that the widget customizer started out as a proof of concept for a client project. So a lot of what was architected was an overlap with client work. So that's how it was birthed. And then, yeah, late nights and hobby time to bring it to the core is really how it.
So let's talk about how that process starts. The widget customizer was a features as plugin feature, and that concept started in, I guess really the first one was originated in WordPress 3.6, but the workflow started in 3.7, is that correct? Maybe? With MP6?
Well, wasn't the menus originally a plugin as well? It was kind of the first plugin as a feature.
Yeah, the menus was a thing from WooThemes originally, but I think it was merged in differently versus being like a core development pattern the way MP6 was.
Definitely, I think it's definitely a precursor to that, where we had this idea of building menus. This is back in 3.0, and we spent probably a month trying to figure out the best way to do it, and then WooThemes finally launched something, and they said, hey, we actually have done this, and we ended up taking it and we merged it in. We ended up probably rewriting a lot of it, which isn't that, I mean, heck, we rewrote a lot of the widgets customizer as well. I mean, code needs to evolve in order to keep going, and it ended up working out really great. And that was, I mean, we're talking now, that's going back 4 years at this point. That was, you know, January, February, March 2010. There have been a few other things as well that have been merged in as plugins, but for the most part, what we've had is, for the most part, we've just had people maybe sometimes doing development in a plugin. For example, like the customizer started off in a plugin, even media started off in a plugin before it came in. And the features, plugins kind of paradigm just formalized a lot of that and created a really strong path for that to occur.
So what was the process for the widget customizer on your end, Weston? And then what has to happen in that merge phase as well?
Yeah, I was doing this plugin, this widget customizer plugin, just because I saw it as being a need, and I didn't know about the widgets UI group that was actively working on improving widgets in core. So Helen actually pinged me and invited me to join the team. And so then the widget customizer became, there were different prototypes being discovered, being explored in the widgets group, and so the widget customizer plugin became the prototype for the customizer integration. And so then work continued in the context of our GitHub repo and pull requests, and collaboration happened there. And then once you're ready to propose for core merge, then basically a ticket was created and Nason just dropped it into core.
So
as it often happens.
So I guess a question for Mike and Nason, once you drop that code into core, what's the process like? What's that period like with that initial integration?
I think it's very different for every plugin. For everything that we're ever going to do, it's always going to be a little different. I think the cool thing about the widgets customizer is that it was so well done, and it had so much breadth to it. There was a lot going on there. I mean, I believe the original commit was upwards of about 4,500 lines of code between JavaScript and PHP, not to mention there was CSS in there as well. So there was a lot going on for sure. And in this case, I mean, once we finally pulled the trigger on it, it was just a matter of how can we just make sure that there are no edge cases and clean it up that way. But I didn't have to do a whole lot. I spent a few days, you know, really digging into it to making sure that, you know, that things were well on my end. But I mean, Weston and the team did a great job on it. So eventually what ended up happening is that another committer, Dominic Schilling, ended up taking point on it and worked with Weston pretty much one-on-one for a good month, I think. And that really worked out well because I didn't need to deal with it at all. It was just, they ran with it. It was really easy. So Mike, I think you had the exact same angle from that too, where I mean, I don't think either of us really had to deal with the widgets thing too much because it was handled. It was good to go.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was just making sure that it was as fully tested as we could have it be with all the different cases that, you know, sort of come out when you toss something into software such as WordPress. And yeah, I think Weston, Dominic, and Gregory all did a really great job right at the end, sort of rallying together and, well, through the cycle, but especially at the end to sort of get everything resolved and set so it was ready to go.
Yeah, and Sean Andrews and Michael Arstad, how do you say his last name?
Yeah,
they have been were a huge help throughout the process as well, getting everything looking great, adding dashicons for the widgets in the preview, and it's really giving it the UI polish that makes it a pleasure to work with.
What's really interesting is that Sean and Michael didn't contribute a whole lot actually during the 3.9 cycle. Most of their contributions came at the end of last year when it was still a plugin, which was great too. I think it was really cool that, you know, I think it was going back to September or so when this idea started getting kicked around. So really 7-8 months of collaboration kind of went into this, which is, I think, really fantastic.
Huge. How are props managed for core for something like that, where someone's contributions were on the plugin side, not the core side of the development?
Everyone ended up getting propped. Everyone was on the credits page. A few of them even had their face on the credits page. I think Weston actually might have gotten propped twice for it. I think I added him the second time for good measure. and we did the same thing with all the feature plugins we merged in 3.8 as well.
You have to change the log of all the contributions with their WordPress usernames as well on the plugin, so it would help that props list.
Very, very easy to track, for sure.
So three of the features that were added to 3.9, they were really different. One was the features as plugin that we've just talked about, and then another was image editing and TinyMCE, which involved a lot of legacy code. And then there's brand new features with playlists and a lot of what you did, Scott. I'd like to talk about the difference between those. So let's start with Scott with the playlists. What's it like when you have kind of a clean slate and you're allowed to build something brand new compared to dealing with more of what Gregory and I think Helen were involved in with handling a lot of legacy code?
Well, I think there was still a lot of legacy code to look at, because it was really, this is one of the first features built on top of media from 3.5, and I think, you know, the first part of the release was really us just understanding what was there, how it worked, how we should build on top of it, and, like, that actually wasn't solved right away. We had several iterations of how we did things and tried to figure out how can we add new stuff without adding too much code and without, like, reinventing any wheels. A lot of it too was, you know, for me, the media has existed with audio and video for a long time, but, you know, there was really never an advocate for let's take it and actually make it on par with images. So it was cool to be able to really invent how some of that stuff works. Making it really easy though, it's really the fact that we adopted media element in 3.6. Media element is great for audio and video, and I think, like, as much of the internet that can get on media element, the better, just because it really kind of tames the beast of HTML5 audio and video. So it was cool to be able to, you know, solve the problem everyone's having, which is how do you deal with HTML5 audio and video, and kind of using WordPress as the platform for that. I mean, that was really cool. I think, you know, building new stuff's cool, but I think as somebody who, like, spends a lot of time in WordPress, you do hate to, like, add so much new code for anything. Like, so I like to find ways to make our existing stuff work and our use existing things, but this was kind of a feature that didn't really exist before, so it was necessary. But, it still takes, you know, really understanding, you know, what you're building on top of, and I think the more people that can understand how media works, the better. And I think it's cool to be able to see a feature, you know, kind of by itself as an example for how you build on top of that stuff. So if other people are like, I want to build a thing on media, the audio video, I think, is a decent example to look at.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things, too, is that, I mean, there was some existing code that got reused there, because, I mean, if you think of galleries as groups of images, you know, the media code now has this concept of a collection. So you can have a collection of attachments, and in this case, a playlist or a video playlist is just a collection of audio or video files. So we're talking about backbone collections at this point, so really getting into the nitty-gritty. But that really helps, because then you can start to think about how else can we start collecting attachments, whether it's maybe a document collection or something along those lines. So it took a lot of the stuff that was written specifically for galleries and 3D5 and just kind of blew that out of the water, which ended up working well.
How has that affected core development for y'all? I mean, most of y'all have been involved with the project for a pretty long time, but there's a lot more JavaScript, the introduction of using Backbone with a lot of WordPress features. How has that really changed core development?
Well, I think, like, Backbone is becoming kind of a standard for kind of elegant programming. And Greg probably knows a lot about this, too. I mean, in the JavaScript community in general, though, it's kind of like Backbone was a big deal for a long time and still is. People are getting into Angular now. I don't think we're ever going to go the Angular route, but I like how we're using Backbone to build on top of WordPress. The New York Times, the new redesign is built intensely with Backbone and Grunt. So, yeah, I think Backbone's a good way. It's a great framework to build stuff on, and Greg can talk a lot more about this because he used a lot of it too.
Yeah, sure. I want to kind of step way back just for a second, and if any of you are out there are interested in contributing to core, I think the main thing I would say is don't be afraid. Don't, like, just jump in and be. It's okay. You'll make some mistakes. You'll, you know, have some things you need to learn. All those sort of things. Like, just do it. I mean, I wish I would have been more involved sooner than I was. So anyway, that just as an aside. But as far as all this media stuff goes and Backbone and whatnot, I mean, I think the reason why Backbone is a pretty decent fit with WordPress core as far as a sort of modern approach to structuring JavaScript is that it's a library and not a framework. So something like Angular, where you have this framework that it makes it a I'm not very familiar with Angular per se, but the notion of a framework it makes it hard to kind of plug it in a small way, and so because Backbone is a library, it can kind of flow in sort of gradually, but there still is a lot of other approaches to JavaScript within WordPress core that that eventually it would be nice to find some more consistency.
Like the customizer.
The customizer, I mean, just kind of straight jQuery. You also have TinyMC with its own style and whatnot. And there really isn't at this point sort of a decided upon way to set up hooks that plugin authors can hook into. You know, sometimes we use jQuery custom events, which I think is probably the most common, but there's been some discussion about some other avenues of sort of consistently providing a way for plugin authors to hook into the JavaScript.
Yeah, and Weston actually points out in the chat about how Backbone was, or the customizer was developed before we started using Backbone, which is true. The customizer was in 3.4 Backbone. We didn't start using it until 3.5. There's a lot of stuff that duplicates it. And a lot of this just shows that so much over time has just kind of been built. I mean, you know, Justin in the chat mentions that Quick Edit and Bulk Edit, for example. I mean, that was 2.7. And then you get up to 3.0 and you have Menus, which is written very differently than Internal Linking was written in 3.1. And then you start getting further and further up the stack and you start to see that all these different features kind of are slowly getting to not only a better point for the future, but more maintainable, but slowly starting to circle around one thing. So, you know, the views and the playlists weren't the only thing that were heavily built on Backbone. The widget customizer is built heavily on Backbone. Custom headers had some Backbone and underscore stuff in it as well. So that was pretty cool to see. If the customizer was done again, I'm sure it probably would be in Backbone for sure, and that's definitely a direction that it continue to go. But I think it just shows it's a really good testament to how quickly we can kind of evolve and, you know, really just settle on something that we can continue to build on top of in the future.
Another question that we had from the chat room was about the Grunt workflow that we use. Helen, I think you had some involvement in some of that decision making. Can you kind of talk about the new workflow for with using Grunt versus what WordPress used before and why we made that switch?
Sure. I think Nason probably had more to do with decision making than I did. We moved to Grunt we're talking about modernizing workflows, right? And also sharing our workflows between us. So, for instance, this cycle, we introduced a Grunt pre-commit command, which allows us to, standardize what we do before a commit and also make sure that, we're matching what we're doing. So that's, it runs a bunch of tasks, whichever one it is that we use for minifying images, making sure they're as small as possible. We use auto prefixer, which is a post processor for CSS, and it allows us to use vendor prefixes based on browser usage. It's not blind, and we don't have to maintain a list of browser prefixes. And we do JS hint. I don't think it runs PHP unit anymore. It did for a little while, maybe in patches or something. But it just runs a bunch of things before we commit, so we make sure that we have a standard way of doing that. And we also added SAS in 3.8 just for color schemes in the merge of MP6, the new admin styles. I think of it as being sort of experimental to see what it's like to adopt something like that. There are a lot of things that I think about WordPress, with our adoption on the web, we're in a lot of ways we're like a first point of entry for somebody learning about how to develop on the web, right? And the second we introduce a layer of complexity to contributing back to core, I think that shuts out a large group of people who could potentially, even just learn about developing on the web, not just contributing to WordPress. My fears in introducing something like a preprocessor for all of our admin CSS, they're compounded by, both, shutting people out and also the fact that, our admin CSS is just not structured in a way that would really take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. But with the color schemes, it's a really cool experiment, and it's been great for maintaining them because they're much easier to maintain than they were before. Mm-hmm. CSS Janus, which Yoav implemented for right to left, has been incredible. Not having to hand maintain right to left CSS anymore is I think my favorite thing about this whole Grunt process, and just everything about it, being able to modernize and standardize and all those things and introduce these concepts also to such a large group of contributors has been amazing.
And when something like that is introduced, a tool like Grunt or even SAS with a preprocessor, how does WordPress deal with when something new and shiny comes out? Like, what if CSS takes on some of the properties that SAS currently handles? Or what if something like Gulp comes along and everybody's like, well, this is way cooler than Grunt, let's switch again? How do we deal with those problems?
I think that WordPress as a whole, we're not really the new and shiny kind of crowd, right? Our focuses are not on ourselves as developers. And we think about users first, and that includes a lot of aspects of what do you even consider a user to be. So I think in that way, we tend to wait for things to become, widely adopted or show signs of becoming standardized or become an actual standard before adopting them. You can see this in a lot of places. Stuff like even high DPI user uploads, right? We're still hacking support for that in browsers, and to support that for a user-facing feature can be really difficult, just because we're not, there's no standard for us to abide by. There's a lot of considerations that we take into account. We also try to play nicely with, our open source brethren, right? So we look for projects that, are going to stick around and we can communicate with, not just what's the latest and greatest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's actually a really good point, is that we're not necessarily always going to adopt the absolute best tool for the job. We're going to adopt the tool that makes the most sense for us. So maybe Gulp is better than Grunt. I don't actually believe so, but it doesn't really matter, especially because we make it a point to have really good relationships with the with the external libraries that we use. So, for example, before we adopted Backbone, this is actually what happened. I went with Daryl Cooper-Smith to New York Times in August, right before about 5 months before 3.5 came out, and sat down with Jeremy Oshinkos, who's the lead developer of Backbone, one of the reasons why the New York Times uses a lot of Backbone. And we went in thinking that we were going to use Underscore, maybe use Backbone, and probably not use CoffeeScript. And we came out saying, we're definitely not using CoffeeScript, which he also wrote, we are going to use Underscore, we're definitely going to use Backbone, it was perfect for what we needed. And we've had a number of conversations with him since then. You know, whether it's talking about backwards compatibility concerns, we know exactly how they're going to move. We knew that, you know, they might break a few things here and there, but for the most part, the API is going to be pretty stable. We're really close with the jQuery community, which is why jQuery and jQuery UI, we want to continue to use that because they offer a really good balance for us. We know that if something gets broken or whatever it might be, that'll be fixed really quickly. Sometimes within a few hours, they're like, yeah, okay, we got that handled. They will time point releases around for us if we need them, things like that. We went back and forth a lot with the author of Masonry, for example, to make sure that could be set in stone and good to go. And with Grunt, we know a lot of people at Boku, which is where Cowboy Ben Allman works as well, who does Grunt. And so we're really familiar with all these different projects, and we know that, you know, when we've adopted them, we're also adopting the people behind them and the philosophies behind them, which is, in many ways, why people are adopting WordPress, too.
And in this release alone, there were 9 external libraries that were updated. Can you go into a little more depth about sometimes having to deal with the backcompat? The one that comes to mind for me specifically is the update to Masonry 3.0, where Masonry 2.0, whatever, had some things in it that were completely taken out of 3.0. What more specifically did we do to ensure backcompat for something like Masonry?
That's a fun one. Sometimes we get really lucky. Sometimes it's a little more difficult. With Masonry, one of the things that was really nice about it is that we're like, all right, we're going to need to write a shim for this. We're going to need to make it so if you're using 2.0 code, it'll work with 3.0. And then someone opened up a bug report and said, "Hey, I didn't even recognize the name specifically." They opened up a bug report against the repository and said, "Hey, look, I want to use this in WordPress, or WordPress wants to update, but they can't." And so the author who just wrote a shim for it, we're using an official shim, which is great too. And also pointed out in the chat, I did forget one particular library, is that MediaElement.js. We worked really closely with John Dyer even before that was added into core. We actually did a security review on the code. We fixed some stuff before it even went in there. John is fielding questions and patches from Scott Taylor, it seems like, at all hours of the night. Scott obviously could talk more of this, but I think just the relationships we have at the libraries are really important to making sure the backwards compatibility is good. jQuery doesn't ever break backwards compatibility that will affect us. Certainly nothing that we can't work around. That's really helpful. And then also, we're really clever at making sure that we're not going to break things from version to version. We got really lucky in 3.9 considering all the churn. I mean, even TinyMCE, things didn't blow up completely, which is better than I expected 5 months ago. So that's definitely good.
Well, considering that cleverness... another question from the chat from John Bella. Is it safe for me to upgrade my blog from B2 to WordPress 3.9?
I had answered in the chat, yeah, probably it is. we test currently from down to 2.7. So if you install 2.7 and hit the update button, it will take you directly to 3.9. And we tested specifically because 2.7 was when we added auto updates. But if you can go back even further than that, and it'll convert your database tables and do everything all the way back to the original versions, probably to B2, but I don't really know. That's the one I haven't tested, so maybe someone else can test and get back to us.
So Gregory and Scott, I'd like to talk about editing images and creating those panels for media in general and just dealing with that interface. And other people, feel free to chime in too, but what was it like? What's the process for getting rid of thick box for something like edit image and then converting it to the new views? And what are some of the benefits that users are going to get out of that?
Yeah, so I worked on that piece, and so the big win with shifting to using the media modal to handle the edit image when you're inside the TinyMC is that because we have all this media code there, it's very easy for us to go and grab the actual attachment data. So we can say we can say, oh, I need attachment ID, whatever, and pull in things like the size information, and then also be able to hook that up to the existing image editor. So you can edit the original attachment and crop the attachment or resize it or rotate it, and then immediately it's updated within in the media modal, and when you update, hit update, then it updates the image that as it is in the post. So I think that's I found, especially as I started working on it, because originally, I mean, it was the main thing was that, if I remember right, it actually isn't a thick box. It's a dialogue within TinyMCE, so a TinyMCE dialogue, which isn't responsive. So one other thing that I did was make sure that it's responsive. It works all the way down to small screens, except for the image editor. We didn't touch that, but the basic functionality works down to a small screen. So because we upgraded to TinyMCE 4.0, a bunch of work needed to be done to make that modal work anyway. So rather than building it within the TinyMC land, we built it in the media land. Do you have a follow up? Missed something. Or?
No, I mean, a lot of it. It's a kind of a steep learning curve at first. I actually made a GitHub repo for Ryan Markle. When I was in Napa, he asked me, you know, oh, hey, how do you do that? And I had a very hard time explaining with words. But on GitHub, my account is S. Taylor. I have a repo called example-thing that kind of shows you a little bit of boilerplate code and how to do it.
Right, yes. Yeah, so, sorry to interrupt. So we kind of shifted gears a little bit. So I was talking specifically about images, but and what Scott's talking about is this WP views. So what a WP view is, just to kind of set the stage, WP view is a non-editable block that's inside of TinyMC. So when I say non-editable, I mean non-editable in terms of I can't type in it, and it's not content editable true, if you really want to get into the lower level actual browser APIs. And so the way it works is that it replaces the short code with this view, and then when you select it, then you get tools to be able to edit the content of the short code. From there, Scott, you can continue with your thing view that you created.
Oh, yeah. So, like, really the work Greg and Andrew Oz did was kind of making TinyMCE have this concept of a view. But there's a lot of baked-in code now to when you create, you know, another one. If you create another short code that has a modal, there is some boilerplate code you need to pop the modal open. But once you do, it's extremely powerful. And a lot of the code that Coop wrote in 3.5 like has a lot of black magic that really makes syncing your data in Backbone like really easy. And like, you know, so actually creating these underscore templates that represent your modal window and the editor view within TinyMCE actually is pretty easy, but it requires like knowing, you know, what pieces of code you need. I think like for future iterations, we should try to find a way to make this a little more magical and a little bit easier to kind of onboard a feature.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, that was one of the reasons why Andrew Oz and I kind of towards the end of the cycle said, let's mark this experimental so that we can change it.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the real challenges when you're doing these iterations on functionality within WordPress is once it's introduced, then you know, developers, especially if it's a good feature, developers are going to want to jump in and say, hey, I want to do something with this, you know, let me start hacking on this, and then all of a sudden we're stuck in a way, I mean, because we don't want to break stuff, because, you know, the hacker that gets super excited about something also some time down in the future is like, oh, I want to go do something else, and so then that plugin is, you know, sort of frozen, and all these people are using it perhaps, and so we want to avoid breaking their sites. So that's a challenge, I think, with introducing experimental functionality.
Yeah. I mean, the other cool part about the work that happened in this release, in 3.7 or 3.8, one of the features that was proposed was content blocks, and it didn't really get off the ground because this was missing. And I think something like content blocks or something like, hey, let's create a bunch of different things you can drag into the editor or pop open these little windows is now possible. And I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's like a lot of us understand how it works now, and the framework is really there to make those things happen. So I think like this release was really like, how do we do this? And you know, even up until the past 3 weeks, we were solving issues with how it works, how it consumes memory. And I think, you know, the stuff we did are good examples of things we can, you know, build on in the future.
So where are we going in y'all's opinion then in terms of content creation, art direction within posts, some of the ideas that were talked about, I guess, around WordPress 3.6 a lot. What do you think is the future of WordPress from that perspective?
I had this really great conversation with Mel Choice the other day. She's the designer of Automattic. She worked on, she designed the About page along with Kelly Dawn, did a lot of great work on designing.
She helped with the image stuff too.
A lot of the images stuff. Art direction can be really tough, and she was saying that when she took the About page in 3.8 and turned it into the announcement post. We did the exact same thing in 3.9. And she had told me that it took her hours and hours to do it in 3.8 because the art direction, the actual manipulation was really tough. And then when I asked her if she wanted to do it for 3.9, she's like, I don't know if I want to do that. That was a lot of work. And then she realized, actually, a lot of the stuff that we added in 3.9 makes it a lot easier. The dragging of images so you can get it just right, things like that. She said it was much quicker. It took her a much less amount of time. And I think that's really good that we were able to do something like that. At the same time, there's another contributor, Avril Janica, who has also worked a ton on the image editing and the UIs there with Gregory, and took some of the.
She did a great design work on the modal version of it. Yeah.
Yes, we took some of the worst areas of core and just made them look pretty suddenly. It was kind of awesome, actually. But she's done some really great work as well. She's been doing the front end editing plugin, which is also a feature plugin that, you know, at some point will probably in some form make it into WordPress. I think one of the interesting things now is trying to figure out like so we have like all these different ideas. We have the customizer, we have content blocks, we have front end editing, we have views. How does all of this kind of tie together as like one harmonious experience? And that's like the goal that I think all of us are kind of chasing, even though we don't really know about it. And we'll get there eventually, but you know, for right now, I think it's really interesting to see all the cool stuff moving forward. Someone else, I'm sure, probably has way more to add to that. But
yeah, I mean, in addition to that, I mean, I think the logical next step for the image stuff is rethinking the actual image editing experience, which there's been a lot of discussion about. Dave Martin has done some wireframing, and Helen has lots of ideas, although she seems to have, her video's paused for me at least. I don't know if she's still on. Anyway, yeah, so I think that's a logical next step. Another one, which is one that Janica is interested in, is how do we make these views work on the front end? Because some of the same content editable problems that we had on the back end, she has on the front end with the front end editing problem, front end editor. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how all these things shake out.
Cool. Anybody else have anything to add on that with kind of blending these different concepts for content creation?
I think that widgets are very undervalued as a feature of WordPress, because they have this really tight MVC model. You got your rendering method and the model, which is like the instance method of the widget, and then the form, which is like the controller and managing of the model. And widgets, I think, can be used a lot more in WordPress to provide authors with the ability to manage areas of WordPress. And so, like, for example, the content blocks, thinking of like a video content block or audio content block, this could be implemented as widgets. And then if we just add more areas where these widgets can be dropped in, like in post content or in the sidebar, then it's kind of a uniform interface that new features can be added to WordPress.
Yeah. I think there are kind of two things that we're talking about most of the time when it comes to content blocks. And I think we've seen both being explored, both, you know, like in mock-ups by people like Mel, and just, you know, things that we continuously build for client things. I know, like, I'm on the second build of what are basically content blocks for a client site. I think the two things that we talk about, one is what I think most people think about when we talk about content blocks, which is more of like a layout sort of engine, so mapping widgets to the way that we manage various bits of contents around a website. So that could be something on a per page or per post level, or it could be something global to your whole site. There's a second part of it, and I think this is actually more of what Mel and also that plugin were experimenting with, which is more of the actual content creation experience, which is creating it in a more modular way, as opposed to thinking about like how your whole site is laid out in blocks, but rather as you're creating content, what do we think of when we're creating content, right? Like, do I think I'm going to write a bunch of paragraphs and then I'm going to stick some pictures in various places? Or is it that I write a paragraph and then I want to add an image, or I want to add a couple of blocks of something else? So they're actually two different things. I don't think they exclude each other. It's just really interesting to me to watch these two concepts constantly kind of float around and think about where they might collide eventually.
Yeah, I don't think any concept that we've discussed so far is going to be what's going to be the future, ultimately. I think it's going to be some weird combination or successor, which is not a bad thing. I mean, we've had this happen a lot. The customizer was actually version 3, believe it or not, of a long, long process where, I mean, Darrell Coopersmith originally was a Google Summer of Code student, and he wrote the Elastic theme. This is now in 2009. 2010, he wrote a Visual CSS editor, and both of those kind of didn't really go anywhere except A, teach him a lot, and B, tell him what not to do, and then it ended up turning into the customizer as really round 3 about a year later, which is, I mean, really, it ended up working out really, really well, I think. But, I mean, there's always going to be these ideas throwing up against the wall, and that's kind of the benefit of the feature plugin idea, is that not all of them will end up as features. Some of them will end up as, hey, that's still a great plugin. We never need to bring it into WordPress. And then also, and sometimes it might just be a situation where it's, well, it's a cool idea, it's a cool prototype, but it doesn't need to go beyond that, and we've learned a lot from it, which is good. And trying to figure out what we've learned from each of these is definitely going to help a lot. So.
To take a left turn a little bit, who can give me a layman terms explanation of MySQLi and why that matters? I know it was a big feature and a lot of work was put into it. So
honestly, doesn't matter at all. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Not at all.
No. PHP 5.5 dropped. They actually deprecated the MySQL extension by default. They're trying to push everyone to use either MySQLi or PDO. We went with, very simply, a very mundane, simple, lack of abstraction way of moving to MySQLi if it was available. Some of the crappier, much older plugins depend on having MySQL connected. Those shouldn't have too much of a problem, especially because we only turned it on for PHP 5.5 or higher. Ultimately, though, it doesn't. I mean, I think the most we really get from it is maybe a little bit more respect in the wider PHP community. But in terms of a project, we didn't gain anything. It's not faster. It's not more safe. It's the same thing, really. The way we use it. So, But yeah, no, it's cool. I think actually the cooler thing that we kind of snuck in there really early in the cycle, Gary Pendergast, who previously worked at MySQL and Oracle before he worked at Automattic, so he does all this database stuff. He wrote another thing where if the server goes away, you might see that error sometimes. MySQL, you know, the server has gone away. WordPress will now try and reconnect, which kind of helps with some fault resistance in the sense that, you know, if you're having some issues with your server, it will try and reconnect. Obviously, it's not going to prevent a really, really overloaded shared host server from crashing, but at the same time, there could be some benefit there, which I thought was pretty cool. And that one probably has more of an impact, not a huge impact, but still a little more of an impact than what MySQLi has, I would say.
Scott, we hung out a couple weeks ago, and we actually talked about databases, and you went on about how what if WordPress could more easily support different types of databases. Can you explain what you meant by that and why that could be beneficial?
Yeah, I think, like, it's just an idea I've had of, like, what would it take to do it. The implementation may never – it's really kind of like Marco had the idea of these database drivers where you could have a different implementation for MySQL. And then it comes down to, you know, if you're some big enterprise company that has Oracle DBAs and, you know, they want to run WordPress for something, sometimes there's actually resistance to supporting MySQL. So if somebody did want to support Oracle, you know, what does that mean? How do we even begin to support that? So kind of in my spare time, I've been, you know, I'm going to spend some time looking at that. No promises, but it's, you know, what if somebody wants to use Mongo? Is that something that's even feasible? It's really kind of understanding the way we do SQL. And, you know, should that evolve? Should it remain the same? Who knows? It's more of just, you know, thinking outside the box and seeing what could be the future, you know, what could be possible, you know. It's really kind of an abstract idea. There's nothing set in stone. I actually did a little bit of work around creating a method that would, instead of writing select statements, you would actually, you know, like a lot of, ORMs. ORMs, yeah, a lot of ORMs, you don't actually write SQL ever. You know, you're really writing objects that kind of create these statements. So I've actually done a little bit of work around creating a thing that creates statements, but it's very tough, and it's also tough to figure out. There's a lot of places where people in WordPress can hook in and change or write direct SQL. So it would be a tough thing to solve, and I'm not sure there is major benefit, but I think for portability and for, you know, allowing WordPress to run in more environments, it would be cool.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. I don't know how much huge benefit we'd end up getting, which is not a bad thing. People have already written, you know, basic abstraction layers for Postgres and whatnot, but obviously they'll break from version to version, for example, things like that. One of the things that did get added, one of the things that's actually kind of cool about what we've done in 3.9 is just we flat out rejected the idea. This is not really that cool, but we rejected the idea of having an abstraction that was proposed, mainly because we kind of realized that the database class of WordPress, we're going like 12 years now on how old this thing is. It's not necessarily built for a proper, you know, what you'd want in a proper abstraction layer in terms of an interface and a good object-oriented interface. So I think one of the big things that people talk about when they talk about database abstraction, which I find really interesting, is that they talk about how Oracle could one day kill MySQL. And it could just be gone one day. And I think the really cool thing about it is that doesn't, a few years ago we started saying, you know, that'll be fine, someone will just fork it, it'll become this other thing, it'll still be the same. And if you look at it now, you have our PerconaDB, you have MariaDB, you have these other options that are 100% compatible with WordPress. And a lot of times people say, like, when will you support MariaDB? And the answer is always, like, since 2.0, probably it works. So I think it's kind of interesting just to see that, you know, even though we're starting to see a bit of a fractured landscape on the database front, you know, things seem to be looking pretty good. And, you know, the other question is, too, is that if we end up abstracting everything and we allow people to use, like, Postgres for the, I mean, we're talking 1,000 sites, a few, maybe 10,000 sites that might end up using that, is that extra extension too much to maintain and deal with? Like, is it something that we should actually be bothered with, or is it just going to spread us too thin on QA to even be worth doing? It might not be. It might be something that, like, maybe it doesn't actually get us a lot of benefits. So there's a lot of things to weigh there for sure.
Cool. So I'd like to take a couple minutes before we wrap up. Mike, you did a This Week in Core series on the Make WordPress blog. Talk about how you prepared that, and more importantly, can we get you on record saying that that'll be able to continue in some fashion in the future?
So at the moment, it's a little bit more of a convoluted process than it probably should be for the future, honestly. But it basically takes a lot of sorting through the log to... We have a lot of sort of, we'll say, varied styles of commit messages and such like that. So at the moment, anyway, it's not terribly easy to parse all of that into something that's immediately usable. But basically, I just go through there and figure out exactly what is most important to the wider community. You know, whether it's plugin authors or theme authors, or whether it's people in support, whatever, kind of try and pick the highlights that might go together, and then group them depending on the week and what has the most information to share in different categories. But so this is something that I think would definitely be great going forward. It's also something that takes a really significant amount of time, though. So here's what I'm proposing. I was chatting with Samuel Sidler about this a little bit. I think what would be great is if anyone else is interested in helping out, we could probably take a two-layer approach to this process. And whether it's helping clean up stuff or the initial pull or however it is, I think if anyone else is interested in helping out, that will probably help guarantee its success going forward, so that it's not just me. Give it a little bit more longevity. So if this is something that is interesting to you, even if you're, you know, just getting started out as a contributor, give me a ping, and we can chat about it.
I think one thing that's really cool about that especially is that, I mean, you don't need to know... It's a really great way to contribute back to the community, but you don't need to be a core developer to do it.
Correct.
If you don't even... I mean, if you understand code, you don't even need to be a programmer, but if you can read it and understand it, that would probably be all you really need for this. And if you wanted to be able to contribute, you know, maybe a few hours a week, however long it might take, hopefully we get that a little faster in the future, it would be really great because also, like, Mike and I mean, every week I was reviewing them and going through them and saying, actually, that one probably doesn't matter as much, and, you know, and then we were writing things and whatnot. So going forward, it would be cool because, you know, you would also learn a lot about the code base. You would be able to follow along if you wanted to do it as well. It'd be really awesome. And along those same lines, if anyone ever wants to, you know, play secretary and take notes during our meetings and help publish those as well, I think that'd be awesome as well. So the one weird thing about a meeting is you can't lead it and also take notes at the same time when everything is text-based. I can't type in two windows at once. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways for people to help document all of our process and things like that and be able to help out that way if they wanted to.
Awesome. So I'd like to end with a little bit of a curveball. Let's go around to each person. Tell me, one, where can people keep up with you, whether it's your website or Twitter or whatever? And then if you'll tell me your least favorite feature of WordPress, and then we'll wrap it up. So let's start with you, Weston.
I want to hear the favorite feature in 3.9, too, that you didn't work on.
All right, so your least favorite feature of WordPress, your favorite feature of 3.9, and where we can keep track. Weston, you're first.
Weston Reuter on Twitter is probably the easiest. I'll put anything important there. Favorite feature of 3.9 would be, that I didn't work on, would be the media improvements, the new views. And least favorite feature is magic quotes.
All right, Scott.
Yeah, Wonder Boy music, pretty much everywhere. Twitter, especially. My least favorite feature is maybe list tables. And favorite 3.9 feature? I like the customizer stuff. I think it's really cool. That's it.
Cool. Mike?
So I am at GitSource on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. I'll also be hanging out at WordCamp Miami, so please come say hi. As far as my least favorite feature, I think I'm going to make Nason mad here, but it's probably the plugin editor, the built-in plugin editor, because a lot of people just like to break their sites pretty quickly, and it's something that we provide by default, and yet is not that accessible to a lot of the beginning users that are just, you know, getting started, especially with a one-click install. My favorite feature of 3.9 is probably, I'm going to go ahead and agree with Weston here, I think it's WP Views, and it's not just what it currently what it is currently used for, but really what it represents as an abstraction for the future and what it'll allow us to do, and I'm really excited about that.
Helen?
Okay. I guess Twitter is also the easiest way to keep up with me in terms of WordPress. I'm at Helen Ho Sundy on Twitter. Your 3.9 thing that I didn't touch. I think there's only one feature that I didn't touch, which is the widget customizer. I think I had a finger in everything else. So
I had the same problem. So.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, the widget customizer is super awesome, so I'm really excited about that. I'm also really excited about the WP views, even though like I had a little hand in that, but it's super exciting. Just, you know, what that could mean and watching what people will do with it, I think, is what I'm really excited to see. My least favorite feature in WordPress. I don't know. I think it's always the admin menu that makes me cry. Like every time I have to do something that goes anywhere near it, it's not a feature. It's just it's literally an array. Right.
It is the worst code in WordPress. The array is only the tip of the iceberg. The underlying code behind it is without a doubt there's no question. I think all the lead developers all agree that it is the worst code in WordPress.
It's just horrible. And yeah. So
it's pretty bad.
Like anytime we want to do something to it, like introducing the ability to easily specify a dash icon for your custom post type, that was not a fun hole to go down to add support for that.
Gregory?
I think Twitter is probably the easiest way. It's kind of a hub of sorts. It's at GCORNE. So as Scott likes to say, G-corn.
That's anyway. How I say it. I don't.
That's how I say it. It's funny. I mean, it was the strange thing is it was just a username that I had in college, and I just kind of kept using it because it's unique. Anyway, when your last name's Cornelius, you get a lot of unique nicknames. So as far as my favorite feature, I like Helen, actually ended up touching quite a few different things, although in small degrees for some of them. So even though I did a little bit of work on the widget customizer kind of at the end, very little compared to Weston and Dominic. But anyway, I think that's a pretty awesome thing, and especially all of the complexity around how to manage backwards compatibility and get it all to work. It's pretty impressive. In terms of the worst feature, I think sort of one is how you manage the hierarchical relationships of pages and also how that menus. You know, we still have a numeric box for the menu order and selecting the page parent. I think that's pretty unintuitive to the average person. And then it's disconnected from the menus. So anyway, coming from previously working on for a university that had very page-oriented sites, that was a big pain point.
Nason?
That's it.
Nason, Twitter, IRC, Nason.com. Really, you can find me pretty much anywhere, WordPress.org, track, whatever it might be. I'm more likely to read a track ticket than an email, just to keep that in mind as well. And let's see here. Favorite thing in 3.9, the biggest problem is that I touched a lot of the stuff in 3.9, so I kind of limited myself by saying this. I didn't realize that I had done that. But of all the things that I probably that I didn't work on, I would say paste from Word. I think this is a really cool feature. It's really funny because it's such a stupid little thing, but everyone
loves it. It's huge for users.
Huge for users. I mean, the coolest thing about 3.9 is that we took all these different things that already existed and just refined them and made them better. Maybe it's a little bit of a cop-out because, I mean, it wasn't even necessarily... I mean, it was written by TinyMC. It was an external library, but I think it's great because TinyMC 4.0, especially in addition to a modern API, they also brought in all of this stuff that was just refined experience for users, and this was definitely one of them. So I was really, really happy about that one. My least favorite things, I have two head fakes. The first one is the settings screens. I just don't like settings, and I want them to go away. So that's my first one. My second one is multi-site. I think that multi-site has a really long way to go before it's actually good. And in that case, I mean, there's a big roadmap drawn up, and Jeremy Felt and a lot of others have been diving into that, which is great. But my real one is, I think, the editing experience. As great as 3.9 is, I think it could be so much better. And I think that it's probably still our weakest point. And if you look at what we have and you look at, you know, where other people can go to create content and to design a site and everything else, we have a really long way to go there. And I think that we're going to continue to be chasing it for years. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But there are some things that have already been kind of proposed here and there. And I know that we'll probably play around on some floating toolbars and whatnot in 4.0 and things of that nature to make it a little better. But, yeah, I'm going to go with, despite a smoother editing experience being the tagline for 3.9, I'm going to go with editing experience being the worst thing.
Nice. Well, I'll make myself do it as well. My favorite feature, I think, was the edit image features. I love that you can now change the image size from edit image. I've many times have had to completely delete and reinsert, so I like that. I like the speed of the new modals. I think that's really helpful. As far as my least favorite feature in WordPress, I'm going to go with the default comment behavior for WordPress. I think there's some things that we could fix up and improve that I posted about a month ago on post status, specifically with the types of output, where comments are default and where they're not. So I'd love to see that get better. I also look forward to, I guess, the JSON API more than anything else coming up, because I'd love to kind of, towards what Helen was talking about with the admin, I think that'll really equip people to do all sorts of stuff with WordPress that we haven't seen yet. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. I sincerely appreciate it. Y'all know where to find them, and you can... check this recording out later on PostStatus, poststat.us. You can follow PostStatus on Twitter at post_status. And if you subscribed to the newsletter, you actually have a chance to win a WordPress iPhone case as well, that one. So check out that newsletter to see how to do that. And we'll catch y'all next time. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.